Hello, welcome back to Press TV's coverage of the terrorist attacks that have happened in Paris, France. What do we know at this point? Well, we know that at least 140 people have been killed. Some estimates put that number at above 150. This being a result of what is appearing to be coordinated shootings, explosions, and a hostage situation that happened across the city. At this point, Daesh ISIL has claimed responsibility for this. France has closed its borders. A reporter claims that there are some limited train services that may be available at some stations. According to the public prosecutor office, there are seven of the terrorists have been killed. They do have accomplices, and those accomplices may be on the loose in Paris, which obviously the police are after getting them and jailing them. But any of the numbers that we mentioned, again, needs to be confirmed, of which at this point, what we do know is that the number of these terrorists have been seven to have been killed, along with the accomplices that may be on the loose. Our guest for this rolling coverage, Pepe Escobar, roving correspondent from Asia Time, joins us from Bangkok. And also Eric Dreitzer, founder of StopImperialism.com, joins us from New York. Gentlemen, welcome. Eric Dreitzer, is this a clear-cut case of blowback?
Well, I would be cautious about saying that anything is a clear-cut case when we're talking about not only international terrorism, but things that are obviously related to much larger geopolitical conflicts which are happening. Certainly, if we're to believe the reports coming out of Paris and eyewitness reports, which have even mentioned perhaps that one or two of the attackers have even mentioned Syria in the midst of the attack, certainly all of this remains to be confirmed. But I would stress that before we jump to the blowback conclusion, which is obviously a valid interpretation, I think that we need to ask some very basic questions here, not the least of which is, to what extent is this connected to the U.S.-European war going on in Syria, where we've had 4.5 years of support for various terrorist factions? Are these terrorists who carried out this attack connected to that? In what way are they connected to that? Of course, the Washington Post, the New York Times, and others over the course of the last 4 years have documented at various times that French intelligence services, that is the DGSE, have been intimately involved in working with some of these terrorist factions in Syria, just as the CIA and MI6 and other intelligence agencies, including the Mossad, have been involved in that. So there's a number of angles from which I think we need to approach this question before we immediately jump to the conclusion of blowback, and before we fall into this false narrative of xenophobia, Islamophobia, and otherwise, which of course is going to be sadly very predominant in France and in Europe, as you see a very polarized society in Europe, precisely within the context of this refugee crisis. So there's the intelligence angle, there is the war in Syria, the connections to terrorism in Libya, in Tunisia, in Iraq, of course Afghanistan, all over the Islamic world, you have this connection between the Western powers and terrorism. And of course, finally, I just want to add, we have a historical tradition here, a richly documented tradition of collaboration with those who carry out these attacks, if not collaboration, at the very least surveillance. Of course, those who carried out the Charlie Hebdo attacks, those who carried out the attack on the train, 9/11, many other examples where it has come out after the fact that intelligence services, surveillance services had been watching precisely these individuals. So in the days and weeks to come, a lot of information is going to come out that's going to fill out the narrative that we need to be examining.
Very well, Eric. Thanks for that, Eric. Let's bring in Pepe Escobar in. Pepe Escobar, I'll drop the word clear cut and say, is this a blowback from the intervention in Syria?
For the moment, we can say, we can maybe venture the possibility it's blowback. This was my first reaction, in fact. It can also be a false flag. It's blowback or false flag. So at the moment, it's very, very interesting. For me, this is personal. Jihad came to my neighborhood in Paris. They attacked a place that is a 5-minute walk from where I lived in Paris. I left Paris last week. I commute between Paris and Asia. And it's very, very funny. The Fox News last year, even after Charlie Hebdo, they said that parts of my neighborhood, the 10e arrondissement in Paris, is a no-go area. Obviously, Fox News has no idea about the intricacies of Paris arrondissement and how the, you know, their social composition, what kind of people hang out over there. Basically, the 10e, which was very close to the 11e near Bastille, where there were 4 attacks, in fact, it's a young, relatively hip, bobo, bourgeois bohemian area. The people who live in the banlieue, the excluded, which is basically black people and Muslims, of course, they have a mix of admiration and resentment towards these neighborhoods. So one thing at the moment is pointing to the people who devise these attacks. They are insiders. They are French insiders. They know exactly how Paris works, and they know exactly the targets that they want. Young people, secular, bourgeois, bohemian, multicultural, in fact, because the 10e and the 11e, these two neighborhoods, they are young and multicultural. There are a lot of black people that hang out in the 10e most of the day. They are doing deals in the streets, especially. They are watched by the security forces, but nothing happens. They seem to be harmless. So it's very easy for a French insider, assuming this guy is working linked with Daesh, to infiltrate these neighborhoods. And if he's a black African, it's even easier for him. But there's also another interesting point. I received a lot of different reports and testimonies and friends, right? And something struck me. A Danish citizen who was in one of the cafes that was attacked, he described one of the killers. An absolute pro guy, dressed in black, to the nines, with an AK-47, without a suicide vest, and he was shooting like a pro, like a sniper. 2 or 3 rounds, straight to the point, and he was killing people like flies, in fact. And then he left. He escaped. So the police are saying that all the so-called suicide bombers were killed. It's not true. This guy at least escaped. So the notion that you can have people like that promenading in Paris on a Friday night where everybody is out and there's police all over the place. There's a lot of police around the Stade de France while they're playing France against Germany. There's lots of police in the 10e and the 11e as well. And how can these people not be identified in the middle of the crowd? This is completely nuts. It doesn't make sense. So it also points out that all that striptease that we are subjected in, and I fly all the time, this striptease that we are subjected in airports is stupid. The point is on the ground intel, and on the ground intel in Paris itself, which proves once again that it's beyond faulty. French security, not only the DGSE, DGSE, as we call it in Paris, but French police, Minister of Interior, they say they are surveilling or monitoring at least 200 jihadis that came back from Iraq. So obviously, among these 200, we can have the 8 or 9 or 10 who perpetrated the attacks in Paris. So obviously, the monitoring is beyond faulty once again. So the motives for let's say, returnee jihadis, French Muslims with French passports, born and bred in France, that know Paris very well, that go to Iraq and come back to perpetrate something like this, are, of course, huge. But we also have the colonial heritage of France. We have French interventions in Mali and Libya, of course. We have the, I would say for the moment, very meek François Hollande expedition against Daesh in Syria, the odd bombing raid. So when you put this all together, we have the full spectrum from possible false flag to possible blowback. For the moment, we don't have any hard evidence that this points towards a false flag. So our working hypothesis at the moment is really, really serious blowback, which poses another question. These people are extremely well-trained. We're not talking about the former Al-Qaeda underwear bomber. We are talking now about extremely serious killers, very, very pro, and right. They have backup and cover everywhere.
Okay.
So for me, at the moment, this is the key question.
Very well. Let's bring in Eric Dreitzer. Eric Dreitzer, you know, you want to put all the facts together in one way or another. People are going to assume, and I'm just stuck on average people, let alone experts like yourself or analysts like yourself, that one way or another, this has to be related perhaps to what is going on. Well, let's use Pepe Escobar's term, Ciroc. I mean, I'd like to get your reaction when it comes to terrorists, generally speaking, of what the UK Foreign Secretary said. And I'm quoting over here that countries backing various factions would have to decide which are moderate enough to be included in the political process and which would be excluded. And he says, I'm not so sure I would write off the possibility of agreeing on who is a terrorist. And he said it will require deep press on several sides, including the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. You know, when you're talking about countries to decide who are the good terrorists, who are the bad terrorists, who the moderates are, do you think that these countries are going to rethink their policy? How will this affect their strategy when it comes to Syria and Iraq?
Well, I suppose that there's probably two ways that it could go, and unfortunately, the cynical part of my thinking here is leaning towards the more tragic scenario. But basically, one way that we can look at it is the following: that essentially, what you have is a strategy that has been pursued by the French, the British and the United States, and of course with their regional proxy in Turkey, wherein they provide the financing and especially the weapons to terrorist groups. I mean, it's plain and simple who these weapons are going to. It's going to the Al-Qaeda affiliate Al-Nusra Front in Syria. It's going to groups that have allied themselves with the Islamic State, both in Syria and Iraq, as reported by The Guardian and a number of Arab media outlets. You have, of course, the recent airdrop of 50 tons of weapons from the United States to God knows who in Syria. So there's a number of things that have happened even quite recently that I think demonstrate that the Western powers and their intelligence agencies, their military apparatus, and so forth, have been providing the arms to foment these ongoing wars, both in Iraq and in Syria, just as they did, I would add, in Libya. And remember, in Libya, you had Al-Qaeda. We've talked about this on this program before. We had the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group, Abdel Hakim Belhaj, and all of the rest of these Al-Qaeda-affiliated fighters being lauded by John McCain and the neocons and Obama and all of the rest of them as glorious heroes of Libya and freedom fighters. And then now, a few years later, we have documented evidence, including an article that I wrote on the subject, that Belhaj, the same Belhaj, is leading the Islamic State in Syria. Now, the reason I bring that up is to illustrate this very fluid situation here, sort of a semi-permeable membrane between the Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, the Free Syrian Army, Ahrar al-Sham, Islamic Army of Conquest, all of these various factions. Who's to know who exactly qualifies as a terrorist and not? And remember, David Petraeus, former head of the CIA, one of the highest-ranking intelligence officials within the U.S. Bureaucracy, said before Congress in Washington that it should be U.S. policy to arm, train, fund, and support Al-Qaeda in Syria. Okay, now, I say all of this to lay the groundwork for response to this question. Is the attack in Paris directly related to all of these policies? Again, just as Pepe said, he's absolutely right. There's no way to say definitively right now, just hours after this has happened, exactly who these people are, who they're connected to, and so forth. But again, if we have monitoring and surveillance by French intelligence of all of these people coming back from the region to France, then surely between that and the massive surveillance camera system throughout Paris, the surveillance apparatus generally, and of course their allies in Washington who have an ear to the ground seemingly in every corner of the planet, undoubtedly the information exists. The intelligence on who these people are exists. Moreover, let us recall that the tactics that we saw in Paris, as Pepe alluded to, the tactics are those of a professional. This is a professional operator, a professional killer. Generally speaking, that's not somebody you associate with an ideologically crazed terrorist. This is a smooth operation that was carried out with extreme precision. Now, in my judgment, right, that cannot happen without coordination from intelligence, you know, some form of intelligence. Now, if that comes out, then the question becomes, and I just want to leave it on this point, if that comes out, then the question becomes, to what extent is French intelligence, the U.S. intelligence, and all of the rest of them culpable for what's happened in Paris, just as U.S. intelligence was culpable for 9/11. That story is still very much having traction 14 years later, and I'm willing to bet we'll be talking about Paris for years to come.
Well, let's see over here. We haven't talked about one thing, Pepe Escobar, and that is the timing of this. We're looking at, and I'm going to relate this directly to what's happening on the ground in Syria with Russia. It's been about 6 weeks now. They've been very successful, based on the stats, along with the Syrian army, and of course Iran and the advisory role against these Daesh terrorists on the ground, eliminating many of the positions, many of the terrorists in general. And then you have this incident happen. Could there be a connection? And if so, I know it's something that maybe it's a deduction, but if so, then what type of reaction do you think this would have on countries that are involved? Where would they go with this, since we're in the midst of what seems to be this diplomatic push on the other side, this other track with the Vienna talks?
Exactly. This happened only a few hours before the talks would be scheduled to start in Vienna today, where I wrote about this. It's my latest piece on Asia Times. It's a kind of, they're going to have their top 10 terrorist list. Can you imagine Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Qatar in the same table with Russia, the Brits, the French, and trying to elaborate who is a terrorist and who is not, when everybody knows, everybody who follows Syria and Iraq closely, that all these outfits, they are either ultra-hardcore jihadis or they are moderate to hardcore Salafi jihadis, including all those people that in the Beltway they call moderate rebels. Al-Nusra, which is, Jabhat al-Nusra, which is basically Al-Qaeda in Syria, and Ar al-Sham, which is supported by Turkey. It's affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood. It's supported and weaponized by Erdogan and by Qatar as well. These people, there are no moderate rebels among this lot. Everybody knows that. The thing is, how you're going to elaborate a list? My working hypothesis, even before Vienna started, is that there'll be only a terrorist list of one emerging out of Vienna. ISIS, ISIL, Daesh. And everybody else, the moderate rebels, will be, okay, we can work with them. Because de facto, the NATO-GCC coalition, let's put it this way, has been already working with them, weaponizing them, supporting, leaving them their corridors open. So maybe now, after what happened to the Metrojet, the Russian plane crash, now we are around 90-95% possibility that this was indeed a Daesh subgroup in the Sinai that perpetrated. If that's the case, and if that's the case that Daesh was involved in Paris yesterday, now we get to the really, really serious business, which is way beyond what Al-Qaeda ever did. Al-Qaeda was a ragtag bunch that was promoted by the Cheney regime as this international, multinational terror conglomerate. ISIS, ISIL, Daesh nowadays, considering their budget, considering the oil smuggling, considering the territory that they rule, considering the support, covert or overt, that they get from the Gulf, from the Saudis, and from Turkish intelligence, now we have a real global multinational that is attacking, theoretically, Russia and the Europeans at the same time. I still think this is extremely far-fetched, really. There is a lot of disinformation in all this. There is a black op component to all this that we still haven't really identified. You know, we haven't gone to the bottom of the whole story. And cui bono at the moment? Who profits from all this? In France, we already know who's going to profit. The French neocons, very closely aligned with the American neocons, intolerant political parties such as the Front National, whatever Marine Le Pen says, you cannot trust anything emanating from the Front National, the National Front in France. Mm-hmm. They remain racist, they remain intolerant, they remain discriminatory, and they are a threat to what's left of democracy in France nowadays. Who profits as well? This global architecture of the post-war on terror, in fact, that involves NATO as global Robocop, that involves extreme surveillance of civilian society all over the West. So these people are going to profit. And who's going to theoretically lose on all this? Everyone that is secular in Europe, everyone that is in terms of let's try to integrate the refugees into our different European societies. Everybody has to make some sacrifices like the Germans did, like the Brits are not doing for that matter. But the refugee crisis was created by Western wars, especially American wars. So the blowback in this case is the refugee crisis, which, by the way, was institutionalized by Turkey. Turkey released from their so-called holding camps tens of thousands of Syrian refugees and told them, look, we're not going to protect you anymore. Get out of here. And get out of here means going to the Balkans, going to Eastern Europe.
I'm sorry, Pepe Escobar, I just got to jump in to get a reaction from Eric Grazer. I'm sorry, since we only have 30 seconds, 40 seconds max. Eric Grazer, who would profit from this?
Clearly, the Western powers are going to profit from it because it's going to provide them with a pretext for expanding the war in Syria. You now have a report from CNN that the French are sending their naval vessels towards Syria through the Mediterranean. This is going to obviously provide them with the momentum that they need to expand the war. This provides a pretext for Obama, Cameron, Hollande, and all of the rest of them to avoid the dangerous conclusion that they were fearful of, which is being forced into a coalition with Putin and the Russians against terrorism. Instead, they're going to attempt to use this incident to undermine Russia's mission in Syria and thereby bolster their position and continue on the track towards regime change. Ultimately, their objective in Syria, just as their objective in Iraq, is fracturing the country and using terrorism both in the region and now in Europe as the pretext in order to be able to do that. And obviously, the other main winners are going to be the fascists and the racists all throughout Europe, be it Le Pen in France or the Nazis of Ukraine or the right-wing fascists in Hungary and all of the rest of it. This polarization, this fracturing of the body politic of Europe is a very dangerous development in the coming years.
Thank you for that. That's Eric Grazer, founder of StopImperialism.com from New York. And thank you, Pepe Escobar, roving correspondent for Asia Times, who spoke to us from Bangkok. And that does it for our rolling coverage of the terrorist attacks in Paris. Do stay with us. International news coming up in a few minutes' time at half past the hour.